7 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is News Talk 610 CKTB. Every other week, Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joins us on the program. Good morning, Pam.
Good morning, Tom. How are you today?
I am well. Now, before we get to sugar and the toxicity of sugar, let's just touch on the pink slime issue.
Mm-hmm.
And how I'm reading about the pink slime, and pink slime got its name from I think an FDA inspector who said this is like pink slime, and then it stuck. Since then, tell us, what is pink slime and what's the controversy and what are companies doing about pink slime these days?
Well, it seems that consumer activism or consumer sort of their desires, their shopping habits are changing, and so they're basically saying no to this food after learning about what it really is. So it's also known as lean, finely textured beef, and it's found in about 70% of the ground beef sold in the United States supermarkets. Now, I want Canadian consumers to understand that from what I can gather, pink slime doesn't exist in Canada. It's not supposed to be in Canada.
Okay. And it was an additive to ground meat, correct?
Well, or it is ground meat.
Yeah, okay.
One or the other.
Yeah.
It's basically the remnants of, after, you know, the animal has been slaughtered and so on, it's the remnants that are behind, and they put it through all sorts of different processes and add ammonia to it. And God knows whatever other chemicals. The more reading I do on this, the more I find out about other chemicals that are also used in the processing of this potential, or potential chemicals that are used during the processing of this food. So it's very controversial, of course. One of the major players in this game is basically declaring bankruptcy. They announced that yesterday. Other people have been hurt financially because of this story, and so there's a lot of negative consequences to this fear-mongering that's going on in and around, and it's a justified fear-mongering that's going on in and around this food. So, but rather than focus on the problem, Tom, I think it's important to focus on the solution.
Okay.
And so one of the solutions, of course, is for people to actually seek out their meat from local small family farms, where they actually have the animals out on pasture. Another thing people can do is to buy their own meat grinder and grind their meat themselves. And this could be very economical for a lot of families, because if you buy a very inexpensive cut of meat and grind it, something like a chuck or what have you,
mm-hmm.
and you grind it yourself, you know exactly what's going to be in there, and it's probably going to be less expensive for you to do it that way. So,
you know, we used to have one of those meat grinders, and it would attach to your tabletop, so there'd be a screw underneath and a handle, and it was a big, real thick metal, and you would grind it, and that's the thing. You know, when we see hamburger, you know, it's chuck or whatever, it's like, well, yeah, it's an inexpensive cut of steak, but that's how they make hamburger. They take inexpensive cuts and they grind it up. But at least this way, you'd know what's getting ground up.
That's right. And so it's about going back to basics. So a story like this can scare people, can change people's shopping habits, can hopefully improve the quality of meat in the end, but there's still no assurance that this is going to happen. So to make sure you have the best quality meat for your family, you can do a lot more in your own kitchen to obtain that kind of quality.
All right, only because it's an interesting story, and I just wanted your take, because you know, it goes to, as here are beef companies who are taking, you know, this leftover almost waste product, and even though it contains a lot of protein, and they're like, really, it's meat, and making it into something. I mean, the way they get there, and it's just such an unappetizing story,
mm-hmm.
that, you know what, if you just took and instead of, you know, relying on you know, someone else to sell you, you know, or looking at, well, it says ground beef, I'll just hope it's good. You can grind your own beef, or
right.
you can just get inexpensive cuts, no problem. That's
yeah.
people have taken, you know, it's one less step we do now, and it's one more step. I guess we're one more step removed this generation from the farm and our sources of food.
That's right. And so, you know, when you look at other types of meat on the market, whether it's chicken or whether it's fish or whatever, you have to question what other chemicals could be in that food. And not all the chemicals need to be reported. So there's a 52-page report online that I found with literally hundreds of chemicals that can be used during the processing of a variety of different kinds of meat. And, Tom, I can't pronounce half the names in this report.
Never a good sign.
One of the names I'm looking at is BHT, which is basically an embalming fluid, and it's been associated with cancer. So how do you know if this has been added to the food that you're buying in the store or what have you? So you have to be very... Today, consumers need to be even more discerning because the FDA, the Health Canada's of the world, they're really not doing their jobs in terms of being able to properly regulate our food supply.
Now, on 60 Minutes on Sunday, Dr. Sanjay Gupta did a story about sugar toxicity. But this is not new because you sent me, and I got to thank you for sending me the video with Dr. Robert Lustig. And now there's a Ludwig, as he points out in the video, and a Lustig, and they're on opposite coasts, and they do a lot of the same work. But it was Dr. Robert Lustig from University of California, San Francisco, and he did this amazing lecture on the toxicity of sugar. And not that sugar is bad, but how much sugar we now consume is bad.
Mm-hmm.
That our body, obviously, because of, glucose and glycogen are the natural energy in our body, so we need it. However, how much sugar we produce, or how much sugar we consume, and how sugar is so prevalent mm-hmm. in our diet is becoming a real concern. I want to start with you, and when were you first tweaked to maybe there's something going on with sugar? Because we think of it as, well, glucose, this is what our body uses, but too much is going to be problematic.
Right, and the information is indeed very conflicting and hard to get through because, unfortunately, the sugar industry is so incredibly influential over our governments and over the media. And so, you know, I've been questioning the effects of sugar for many, many years now, but it's because I was very, very sick and I had a lot of motivation to question the food I was putting into my mouth and the effects on my overall health. But really, just to give you an idea of how much opposition there is out there from big sugar, if you want to call it that. Back in 2003, the World Health Organization published a report basically saying that processed foods caused cancer, heart disease, diabetes, and obesity. Now, the sugar industry was so livid over this report that they actually threatened the American government and threatened to pull back on their funding if they didn't go to the World Health Organization and ask them for a retraction of that study. So it just goes to show you the games that are going on today that keep us so detached from finding out the truth. And sugar is one of the worst evils out there in terms of your overall health. Dr. Lustig said it very, very succinctly in these videos, not just on CBS 60 Minutes, but on that video online that's called the Sugar, the Bitter Truth. And that is that sugar is toxic, and it is indeed toxic. Dr. Nancy Appleton, she has a website, nancyappleton.com. She has a book called Lick the Sugar Habit and some other audio-visual teaching tools to teach people about the toxicity of sugar. And on her website, she has over 150 reasons why people should avoid sugar. And in this particular list, of course, the reasons are all cited in terms of the scientific literature. All of the different consequences that are associated with consuming sugar, whether it's cognitive decline, whether it's cancer, whether it's metabolic syndrome or blood sugar irregularities, whatever the case may be, there are so many consequences to abusing this substance. And because sugar is highly addictive, of course, there is a huge area where one has to question the addictive nature of sugar as well.
Pam Colleen's our guest, nutritional consultant, joining us. And today we're talking about the toxicity of sugar. So, Pam, when we come back, this is my weakness. But I've reduced my consumption of sugar because I never knew how bad it was for me. So when we come back, you tell me what it does in the body, but then how we can cut it back. Because it's so prevalent everywhere that it's hard to find things that don't contain sugar. Now, obviously, a little sugar is not going to kill us, but how much sugar we now consume is record proportions. So a little more on sugar and its toxicity on the body when we come back with Pam Colleen. If you're a sweet tooth like me, Maybe time to change your habit. 16 minutes after 11 o'clock. I'm Tom McConnell. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. 21 minutes after 11 o'clock, Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joins us on the program talking about sugar and the toxic effects. But Pam, first when we get, before we get into it, and one of the confusing things I think for a lot of people is, and maybe you can tease it apart. So glucose is the form of sugar that we have in our body and is necessary. You know, this is what our body uses. There's many ways to get to glucose, but our body uses glucose. But then there's fructose and galactose and sucrose and maltose and lactose. I mean, are they all the same, or is there a big difference between the sugars?
Well, there is a difference between the sugars, but the one form of sugar that tends to be extremely damaging to our bodies is the fructose. It's just a very unique sugar. It's very hard on the liver, and it's that reason, one of the reasons why fructose is so damaging. So it's not just that it's present in sugar and in fruit, but it's also because of high fructose corn syrup, which has really just boomed in the marketplace since the 1970s, and that had to do with the fact that high fructose corn syrup was much cheaper than granulated sugar. So the food industry gravitated towards high fructose corn syrup starting in the 1970s, because corn is such a highly subsidized crop in the United States and in Canada, so it makes it so that high fructose corn syrup is very, very inexpensive. And so what's happened is the food industry has been using high fructose corn syrup. Now they've been caught putting this extremely toxic form of sugar in the foods, and so what some of the pop industry is trying to do is to change their look and to look like they're retro.
Going back to cane sugar?
And they're, yeah, and they're returning to, cane sugar. But that's because they're trying to save face, essentially. They're trying to distract people's attention from the fact that they made this huge gaffe by putting high fructose corn syrup in the pop in the first place. And so that's a campaign that has surfaced in the last 2 to 3 years in the pop industry. And so you'll see some of these pops, now have cane sugar back in them. But that's the science. I mean, the science is scaring industry and saying, oh boy, we've made a major, major mistake here, and we need to do something to make ourselves, to rescue the industry somehow. But that doesn't make sugar any more acceptable, really, because whether it's high fructose corn syrup or cane sugar, I'd say cane sugar is probably a notch better, but it's still extremely toxic to the body as well. So it's not a win-win situation at all.
When we look at, and this is where some people get confused, when we look at something like lactose, though, which is formed when it's a molecule of galactose and a molecule of glucose, that is much easier on our body, though, isn't it? It's not nearly as sweet, and it occurs naturally in milk, but not all sugars are equal. That if you said, oh, yeah, you know, there's sugar in milk, it's a different sugar than the sugar in pop. So we can't say, yeah, because fructose and lactose act on the body very differently.
It can, but I use this mantra, it's sugar is sugar is sugar, right?
Okay.
And you have to be very careful with the amount of sugar consumption you're taking in overall in the course of the day, whether it comes from high-quality dairy products or whether it comes from, carrot cake or whatever it is you're getting your sugar from. It's the overall accumulation of sugar in your diet that is something I think that needs to be considered, not the actual type of sugar in and of itself.
But you would agree that, you know, if you're going to have a glass of milk and it had lactose in it, the equivalent amount of, a teaspoon of sugar in your tea, those are going to be different. That we want, if you can cut back on one, you know, that maybe fructose or sucrose, because of the fructose, the damage to the body, that's where we have to focus. And lactose, it's like, well, I mean, it comes with milk. It's probably not the best for you, but if you're going to cut back, then fructose is probably the better one to cut back on.
Yeah, when you measure it in that term, you're right, Tom. So if you're having a glass of milk and it's got some lactose in it, that's fine, especially, of course, if it's raw milk from a local farmer and all that wonderful stuff.
Right.
When you isolate the sugar, that's when it's the most damaging.
Yeah, all right. Right. So then where can I cut back on sugar? Because here I am, a sweet tooth, and I've already cut back on some of the sugar I add to my diet on I choose to cut back on, you know what, I'm not going to have two sugars in my coffee, I'll have one sugar or half a sugar in my coffee. But there's some things I can't cut back. Like, where do you find the easiest place or the best place for people to to cut back on sugars?
Oh, that's a great question, Tom. And even Dr. Lustig mentions this in his video. One of the biggest culprits out there, of course, is the processed drink industry. So that includes everything from your Gatorades to, you know, your Coca-Colas and so on. So,
right.
And even juice.
Including juice, right. Okay.
Including
yeah.
juice. Juice is one of the biggest implicators here. So we have to reduce our consumption of these liquid sugars. And really, that will make a huge difference in your day. So if you switch from consuming liquid sugars to things like clear water, even if you can get things like raw milk or kefir or all these wonderful traditional foods, then you'll be doing yourself a huge favor in terms of your overall health.
All right. Well, that's one of the things where I've cut back. I barely drink pop anymore. My juice intake is severely limited. I focus more on water. So that's and right there, I think I notice a bit of a difference in terms of especially energy level, mm-hmm. where it's just more even throughout the day because I'm not having the spikes of blood sugar.
That's right. And that's what people are looking for when they're addicted to sugar of any kind, is what they're doing is looking for a stimulant reaction in the body on the adrenal glands. So most people have very weakened adrenal systems in the body, and so when you're going for a quick fix with any kind of sugar, whether it's juice or a fine white powder, what people are tending to do is try to boost their energy synthetically, and that unfortunately spirals downwards into an addictive environment, a vicious cycle of addiction, because when you stimulate your adrenal glands suddenly with a burst of sugar, what you end up doing is weakening the adrenals at the same time, and so you have to go back to that substance to give you that sense of synthetic energy. It's not a real sense of energy. It's more of a wired and tired feeling. If you want to have a sustained energy over the course of the day, the true answer is to make sure you're eating enough animal fat in the diet. And to reduce sugar cravings, animal fats are one of the best ways to do that. So when you're eating 3 square meals a day and you're including enough butter, enough meat, enough eggs in your diet, that will help level off blood sugar levels, and that also helps curb sugar cravings as well.
You know, one of the, before we go away to break, and when we come back after the break, I want you to talk about what sugar does to the body, but also, sugar substitutes. Is there a safe substitute? Because people are like, well, what about Splenda? What about NutraSweet? What about aspartame? Can I use those? I think I know what the answer is, but we'll save it to after the break. But one of the great illustrations that Lustig points out is our desire and consumption of sugar spiked just as we cut the fat recommendation in our diets,
mm-hmm.
and how we cut back on fat, and that led to people being unsatisfied. Well, I got to find my calories somewhere. And then taste-wise as well, especially with processed foods, if you're going to cut out fat and you don't want it to taste like cardboard, you've got to put something in it. Salt and sugar gets added to boost the flavor. And that's had such negative health consequences. Our obsession with fat has led us to be fat. Our obsession with cutting fat has led us to be fatter. And it's because of all the sugar we've added to everything.
That's right.
29 minutes after 11 o'clock. More with Pam Colleen after the news. We'll talk about, all right, sugar substitutes. Are they safe? And also what sugar does to the body. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. 35 minutes after 11 o'clock. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joins us every couple of weeks to talk about what's in the news. And I thought this was a great story only because, well, it's been, I'm going to say, maybe on the fringes a bit, Pam. It's getting more and more awareness. What was the author you interviewed? Gary Taub, was it? Taubes?
Gary Taubes, yeah.
Gary Taubes, that's mm-hmm. it.
He published an article in the New York Times almost exactly a year ago, basically touting and piggybacking this idea that, you know, sugar is toxic. So he featured Dr. Lustig's research in that article. But at the same time, what he did was he married two stories together that seem like they're diametrically opposed but are indeed very much related. And one is the fact that animal fats have been heavily demonized now for several decades. And by demonizing animal fats, that took us to eating more plant-based foods in general, including sugary foods and floury foods and so on. And those are the foods that actually have been to our health detriment. And that's, this change in our diet should never have taken place. And it really stems historically in between two different figures that were doing research in and around the post-World War II era. And one is Professor John Yudkin. And Professor John Yudkin, over in the UK, he published a book called Pure, White, and Deadly. And that was in and around 1972. And Dr. Yudkin basically said all of this rise in heart disease, all of these cancers and so on, really have a link, a closer link associated with cancer, with sugar consumption. And then what happened on the other side of the pond over in Minnesota, at University of Minnesota, there was Dr. Ansel Keys. And Dr. Ansel Keys, he theorized that it was fat that was contributing to the rise of heart disease.
Right.
And so it was this, quote-unquote, a very loose debate going on between these two researchers.
Which was worse for us, fat or sugar?
Exactly. And so what happened was, is we, Professor Yudkin was a very shy and quiet man, and Dr. Ansel Keys, he was extremely gregarious, evangelical-like, and the media really took to him, and they featured him on the front cover. I think it was Time magazine back then. And so the media rolled with that story, not John Yudkin's story about fat, about sugar being lethal. And so the truth has been out there for many, many years, but what happened was, is we took our eye off the target by blaming animal fat for causing heart disease, cancer, diabetes. I mean, it's blamed for everything almost. And by blaming animal fat, we've taken our eye off the target being sugar. And so now, of course, slowly but surely, the scientists are coming forward, and I really give Dr. Lustig a lot of credit here, because you have to be very courageous to go up against the sugar industry, the corn industry, the government, the dietary dictocrats. You know, this is a huge David and Goliath story, Tom, and I don't know if people really have an appreciation for just how gigantic this story really is.
Now, Ludkin, when he first did his book, and he was able to show that there's a definite association between sugar and coronary heart disease and type 2 diabetes, and that also triglycerides would go up, insulin levels, and we now know, especially insulin and that hormone, and what damage it can do to the body when it's not properly controlled. I know we talk about energy levels and spiking and crashing and now heart disease, but what also is sugar, do you think, responsible for? What other damage do you think sugar does to our body?
Oh, my goodness. As I mentioned earlier, NancyAppleton.com, she has a list of about 150 reasons to avoid sugar. So there's 150 reasons, Tom, not just cancer, heart disease, diabetes. But if you want to just generalize it, quite honestly, what sugar does is it causes inflammation.
Okay.
And so and that's what cancer, heart disease, and diabetes are. They're inflammatory conditions. And another thing, symbolically, what sugar does is it distracts us from eating the foods that are the most nutrient-dense that actually contribute to our health. And that goes for the animal foods that I mentioned earlier, eating lots of high-quality meat, eggs, high-fat dairy products. If you think about the displacing nature of sugar, how it has moved us away from eating traditional foods, that alone is another very damaging aspect of our high carbohydrate consumption.
Well, what I found interesting with Lustig as well was that when we consume fats, we release leptin, which tells our body to not eat anymore. But when we consume sugars, the satiety hormone doesn't get released, that there's not the equivalent on the sugar end of things. You've consumed enough, because we never had, sugar was never supposed to be a primary source of calories. It was almost a bonus, if you will. Mm-hmm. Fats and proteins have always been a source of calories. And so our body adopted, and it's like, all right, you've eaten enough. You are now full when you consume a certain amount of fat. But when we consume a certain amount of sugar, it doesn't. So that means if you're drinking a pop, you can eat just as much afterwards. And it's like, boy, the body is not adapted to it, that we have no control mechanism over how much sugar we eat. Maybe that's why it's so easy to go through a box of cookies. Or it's so easy, once you start on something that's high in sugar, it's tough to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, this ties into the displacing nature of sugary foods. That is that saturated fat, if you think about the word saturated, S-A-T, you think of sated, satiety, right? And that's what saturated fat does. If you're eating enough saturated fat in your diet, it satisfies your appetite so that you hopefully do not overeat. And carbohydrates simply just do not have that characteristic. So you end up overeating and never feeling satisfied, and then on top of that, feeling miserable all the time as well. Whether it's depression, fatigue, anxiety, sleep disorders, whatever the case may be, you end up, your brain ends up starved of some critical nutrients.
All right, so Nancy Appleton, so I just went on her website, and so she quotes the figure 150 pounds of sugar per person per year, mm-hmm. which is a huge amount. So let me just do the calculation. So 150 divided by 365 is about 40% of a pound. So how many ounces is that? Times 16 ounces. I know, I'm doing math. 6.5 ounces of sugar a day. 6.5 ounces, which is huge.
It's huge.
How much sugar, then, would you recommend? Because we'll never go to zero, but I mean, going to zero seems like, well, that's not worth it. But what's the recommended amount of sugar?
Oh boy, I mean, I think that would be up to huge debate, and you know,
because there's some things
who would give an absolute quantity anyway.
Okay. But you know, 6.5 is too much. Obviously, 6.5 ounces a day is obviously too much. And zero is impossible. There's sugar in natural foods that we consume that we'll never get rid of. But what is there, like, if I'm at 6.5, if I'm the average person, mm-hmm. what should I look to get down to? What should I look to reduce it by? 20%? 30%? 50%?
I'd hate to give an absolute. A measurement that I actually use with my students is based on the book Life Without Bread by Dr. Lustig, Wolfgang Lutz. And Christian Allen. It's a wonderful book. And what they did was they, over 40 years of clinical practice as a medical doctor, Dr. Lutz, he noticed that if he limited carbohydrate consumption to about 72 grams per day, that he was able to see wonderful health improvements in his patients.
Now, that was all carbohydrates, not
all
just sugar. That was everything, every starch molecule, every fiber molecule, every 72 grams total, including sugar.
Yes, and when you look at what that represents, Tom, in a given day, it's a decent amount of fruits, vegetables, and even grain. And, of course, any grain products should be fermented or soaked. So if I'm talking about grain, usually what I'm talking about is things like sourdough bread, because you shouldn't eat grain without some preparation time. So that's actually a decent number of plant-based foods in the diet. It's not a no-carbohydrate diet or even a low-carbohydrate diet. It's more of a moderate amount of carbohydrates in a given day.
So I just wanted as a guideline for people who are going to take away from this and be like, all right, because no one is going to advocate zero, but in moderation, 72 grams total carbohydrates, including your sugars, and because of labeling today, and now you can go online and find out the nutritional content of everything, that in itself will give people a good baseline to start from.
That's right. The book is a wonderful read. It's called Life Without Bread. And honestly, don't take the title literally. All he's saying is that we really need to limit our consumption of carbohydrates in general. So if within that 72 grams per day, you're having a piece of cheesecake or something like that, you're getting some refined sugar, but it's over the course of the day, if you add it up,
if
you're not really abusing sugar in that case. And I find that formula is a really good way to create awareness with people. And so that they don't feel like they have to, absolutely avoid sugar. They can still enjoy it from time to time, but that it will help prevent them from abusing sugar as well.
45 minutes after 11 o'clock. All right, when we come back, the million-dollar question. And we'll talk about sweeteners and artificial sweeteners. And is there a safe sweetener? All right? And then maybe a sugar substitute. All right? Maybe not sweeteners, but is there a sugar substitute? When we come back, I'll talk to Pam Colleen more about sugar, its toxic effects on the body, and is there a safe substitute at all? 45 minutes after 11 o'clock, my name's Tom McConnell. This is News Talk 610 CKTV. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. So, Pam, if sugar's toxic, what about the sugar substitutes? What about your Splenda, aspartame, NutraSweet, Stevia, whatever their names are? Are any of them any good?
I would avoid them. I tell all my students, avoid those products, even stevia. I'm not a big fan of stevia. I know that stevia is touted as being very healthy, but honestly, if you're going to use stevia, grow it in a pot on your balcony or in your garden. That would be an acceptable way to consume stevia. But when anything comes in and it's a fine white powder, I think anything that's a fine white powder should probably be avoided. Honestly, a lot of these types of sweeteners, the synthetic ones that would be man-made, like your aspartames and so on, the research shows so many damaging health effects from eating these sugars, everything from digestive problems to brain tumors to death. There's a lot of independent science that's just been surfacing, showing that we need to avoid these foods. And unfortunately, these foods have been accepted on our marketplace because of flawed science to begin with. So industry-funded science, of course, is going to produce favorable outcomes. And this is what is presented to entities like Health Canada, like the FDA. And so they read industry-funded science, they believe it, and they think these products are safe, and so they put them on the marketplace, and unfortunately consumers have to take the brunt of the problems associated with these foods. And so now, of course, the independent science that is coming forward showing the very damaging health effects associated with things like aspartame, it's just not getting reported on as much as it deserves in the media, because these companies have such a stranglehold over the media and over our governments. And so it doesn't take a lot of digging, Tom, to go in and find out just how toxic these synthetic sugars really are.
Now, stevia is a natural plant. So would you be more for, aspartame is essentially a chemical. Sweeten low is a chemical. Saccharin is a chemical that we've created. But stevia is a plant, but you still don't like, in order to sweeten something or using less of it, you just don't think it would be, again, you'd rather someone grow it themselves? Or what is your main concern?
The sugars that I would rather people use would be things that are locally produced, like raw honey or maple syrup.
Okay.
If people want to grow stevia, they can grow it here in Ontario. I know people who grow it in their backyard. And I think in that format, it's okay to use in baking. I know people who bake with their own grown stevia, and it comes out tasting wonderfully. So I think those types of sugars are fine. But any kind of sugar, Tom, should still be consumed in moderation. I don't think sugar, if anything, it has a sweet taste to it. You still need to consume it in absolute moderation.
Fair enough. All right, mm-hmm. and then in terms of any honey and syrup, even though naturally sourced, you can't go crazy on honey, and you can't go crazy on maple syrup, thinking that you can have as much as you want, can you?
That's right. You still need to eat them very, very conservatively. Again, if you stay within that formula of eating 72 grams of carbohydrates per day, and when I'm talking about carbohydrates, I'm talking about fruits, vegetables, grain, I'm talking about maple syrup, honey. You need to include all of the grams of carbohydrates that you consume in a given day. You could even include the grams of carbohydrates that you would find in a glass of milk, for example. I think in a typical glass of milk, there's about 12 grams of carbohydrates,
right,
or lactose.
Yeah.
So if you can go online into any website and find a carbohydrate counter, and just over one or two days, figure out how many carbohydrates you are consuming, and seeing whether you're exceeding that 72 gram limit. And honestly, Tom, the reason why I use that limit is because so many people out there are consuming 200, 300 grams of carbohydrates a day, and that's just a recipe for disaster.
Now, I'll give people a calorie counter that I've used in the past, which is pretty comprehensive, fitday.com. Very easy. They have a huge library of foods, and you can also, if the food isn't there, you can create it with the label on the back.
But is that a calorie counter or a carbohydrate counter?
It is a nutrition counter. So it counts calories, including fat, protein, carbohydrates, all the micronutrients, and it adds it all up. And
yeah.
So, and a lot of, it'll tell you, it has a pretty basic format, and it'll be like, oh, if you have a pound of ground beef, or if you have one hamburger bun, but it also allows you to custom create. So you didn't even have to use their library, because I know if we just use the labels on the back of, for instance, the package or whatever it came in, if you want to just put it in there, you can save it and you can remember it.
Yeah. Just ignore the calories, folks, because the calorie
yeah.
theory is invalid. So if you're eating three nutrient-dense meals per day and you're getting lots of animal fat in your diet, that's what you want to focus on. And that's going to, if you do a calorie count on that, that might scare you from eating animal fat, because it's a, and Dr. Lustig talks quite a bit about this, by counting calories, we haven't really won this war on obesity. So there's a huge controversy now in and around the calorie theory, because it's really not showing to be truthful. Don't worry about the calories as much as I want you to worry about the carbohydrates and counting carbohydrates. That's a more truthful formula to look for and calculate in your lives on a daily basis, and that will give you better results in terms of your overall health.
Now, Easter's coming up, so maybe I'll have an Easter egg, but I'm sure to have some turkey this weekend. But what are you doing over the next couple of weeks? Where are you going to be located? Are you coming down to this area anytime soon?
I'm going to be in Fount Hill this weekend. Yeah, that's more of a personal trip, but I haven't got anything booked as yet in terms of doing a speaking engagement in your area, but I have some people working on it in the background.
Now, in Toronto, what are you going to be doing in Toronto?
On the weekend of April 20th, I'm speaking at the Total Health Show at the Convention Center on Front Street. And on Friday afternoon, April 20th, I'm teaching a workshop on nutritional help for ADD and ADHD. And over the weekend, if people want to visit with me, I'm going to be at the Weston A. Price Foundation booth. Over the weekend, I'm also emceeing.
And that's the Total Health Show.
The Total Health Show. It's okay. Down at the Convention Center on Front Street.
Well, always a pleasure, Pam Colleen. Have yourself a great Easter. What's your Easter meal of choice? What do you like to serve on Easter or consume on Easter?
Well, turkey. That would be turkey.
I'm thinking I have to go to turkey on Saturday, but I'm thinking of doing leg of lamb on Sunday.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, I love leg of lamb. One of my favorites. Pam, have yourself a great couple of weeks. We'll talk soon.
Happy Easter. Thanks, Pam.
Happy Easter to you. 11:57 is our time. This is News Talk 610 CKTV.